There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots independent media and our media environment. My name is Paul Reeson. I'm your host, and with me in the studio, of course, today is producer Drew Tirico. On today's program, we're talking about the fact that Champaign-Urbana will have another community radio station, a low-power, licensed, but non-commercial FM station. Mike Lehman is here. He's the guy who put the paperwork through and twisted the FCC's arm. And we're going to talk more about the station and how it will develop here. And, of course, we'll catch up on what's going on in our media environment with Media Geek Headline News. Do stay tuned. Media Geek Headline News features stories about our communications environment that typically get relegated to the business pages of our newspapers and often don't get reported at all on radio and TV. News on media law, policy, and economics is not just of interest to investors and media insiders. It's important to all of us, especially if we want to have a role in changing our media environment to serve our needs in a more democratic society. A coalition of community media advocates are urging the FCC to consider creating a low-power AM radio service. Inspired in part by low-power FM radio, the recommendations for low-power AM radio call for stations to operate at a maximum of 100 watts with strict ownership limitations and requirements that most programming be locally originated. The low-power AM petition for rulemaking was filed by Fred Baumgartner of Colorado, with assistance from Nick Leggett, who in the late 1990s filed proposals with the FCC that contributed to the creation of low-power FM. A separate group calling themselves the LPAM team has filed friendly comments in support of the low-power AM proposals and offers some suggestions. Both filings were made as part of the FCC's current Localism Task Force initiative and are intended to be concrete recommendations on how the FCC can enhance local broadcast media accountability. For more information about low-power AM, go to the Amherst Alliance website at www.amherstalliance.org. And Radio Free Brattleboro is making another bid to earn its authority to broadcast from the people of Brattleboro, Vermont, despite the fact that the station does not have an FCC license. The station is running a petition campaign to place a non-binding resolution in front of Brattleboro citizens at the town's annual meeting day. The proposed ballot question reads, quote, "Shall the voters of Brattleboro give to Radio Free Brattleboro, RFB, authority to broadcast until such a time that a low-power FM license is issued to Radio Free Brattleboro or to another nonprofit, locally-based community group which is prepared to offer to the town of Brattleboro diverse, all-access, non-commercial community radio," end quote. RFB needs 450 signatures to place the question on the ballot, which should pose little problem since the station has already garnered thousands of signatures from local citizens on an informal petition of support. On November 18th of last year, the Brattleboro Select Board passed a resolution, quote, "supporting Radio Free Brattleboro and the concept of community radio," end quote, but did not include language indicating that the Select Board was giving RFB the authority to broadcast. According to pirate radio scholar John Anderson of DIYmedia.net, RFB is, quote, "the first micro radio station to seek such an open and democratic official show of community support," end quote. Radio Free Brattleboro has been serving as a community radio station and broadcasting without a license for 5 years. The station was first visited by FCC agents in June of 2003. In response to the FCC's threat to shut the station down, the station's volunteers decided to suspend broadcasts, but then returned to the air in August. The FCC visited the station again on September 4th, wherein agents threatened to return 10 days later to conduct a raid with federal marshals. The FCC has yet to return. For more about Radio Free Brattleboro, you can listen into an interview with station volunteer Sarah Longsmith from the October 17th edition of the Media Geek Radio Show. It's available for download at the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org. You can visit the Radio Free Brattleboro website at www.rfb.fm.
And the National Conference on Media Reform drew 2,000 media and democracy activists to Madison, Wisconsin in November of last year. In response to the call to transform the media into a force that supports democracy and the public interest. Excuse me. Videotape coverage of the conference will air on Urbana Public Television, Insight Cable Channel 6, on Tuesdays at 4 p.m., beginning on January 6th. In the conference keynote, Bill Moyers invoked the memory of those in history who fought for freedom of the press and cautioned that, quote, democracy cannot exist without an informed public, end quote. Moyers was joined at the conference by FCC commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, conference organizers Bob McChesney and John Nichols, Reverend Jesse Jackson, Senior, Studs Terkel, and comedian Al Franken. Two nights of musical inspiration were brought by the quote, Tell Us the Truth tour with Billy Bragg, Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine, and Audio Slave, Lester Chambers of the Chambers Brothers, and, in an impromptu moment, Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein on the harmonica. Video coverage of this conference was produced by Chicago Access Network Television with support from the Joyce Foundation. Again, this coverage will air on Public Access UPTV Insight Cable Channel 6 on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. beginning January 6th. And Viacom's music video empire, MTV, MTV2, and VH1, might soon be facing a degree of competition. Not so surprisingly, the plan materializes from the world's largest record conglomerate, Universal Music Group. Universal is trying to provide an uncensored, all-music video channel to mostly to bolster falling music sales. The channel will present videos in their entirety, unlike MTV and MTV2, which more often than not cut videos for content and duration. Live concert footage has also been proposed. But two of the four interested parties, Eminem's Shady Records and porn giant Vivid Entertainment, one might expect the uncensored buzzword to yield simple punctuations of language and nudity. Shady Records and Vivid Entertainment would each own 5% of the channel under a proposed ownership structure. As for distribution, Universal's effort has yet to secure either a cable or satellite network. DirecTV sources said that it was unclear whether Rupert Murdoch's News Corp would delineate a strategy for adding new channels. A major player behind the deal is Jimmy Iovine, chairman of Universal's Interscope label. Interscope is famous for its support of controversial rock and rap entertainers such as Marilyn Manson and Dr. Dre. Interscope entertainers and their ilk have typically fit well into MTV's rubric, riddled with censored cuts and edits.
Well, thank you, Drew, for that headlines. And you are listening to Media Geek, where we could be as naked as we want to be, but indeed, today we are all fully clothed.
And I think we'll be using the proper language.
We will be using proper FCC-approved language. And of course, whenever the Media Geek show is on, you can turn to the Media Geek website to catch up on what's going on in our media environment and listen to archive editions of the program. Look to www.mediageek.org. We'll be back in just a moment with Mike Lehman to talk about a new community radio station in Champaign-Urbana. Do stay tuned. Welcome back to MeDiggy. My name is Paul Riesmanel. I'm your host. With me in the studio is Drew Tirico, the producer, and also Mike Lehman, who is a member of the Socialist Forum, a group which was recently issued a construction permit by the Federal Communications Commission to build a 100-watt, low-power, non-commercial FM radio station in Urbana. Thanks for joining me, Mike.
Hey, Paul.
And you were here about a year ago to talk about about your application, which at that time you refiled.
Yeah, basically the Congress had eliminated the third adjacent channel and knocked out our original frequency, and they reopened a window for you to adjust a frequency to one that would be appropriate still. And we finally got the good news here a week or so back that we've got a construction permit and 18 months to build a station.
So how long ago did you file the original application?
Original application was filed in, I believe it was 2000, fall of 2000. So it's been quite a while now, 3 years. And like I said, for most of that time, we thought, well, Congress and the NAB and NPR had basically taken away any possibility that we would get a low-power FM.
Right, so the frequency that you had applied for went away, basically.
Right, right.
The Congress intervened and said that many of the frequencies which the FCC wanted to assign to these stations were no good, and they did so. Of course, Congress did this on the part of for the part of the National Association of Broadcasters, but then it turned out, I guess, one frequency the FCC decided was legitimate in their eyes.
Well, yeah, frequency is always changing because it depends upon overlapping signals and other stations, commercial, non-commercial, and whatever. So another slot came open, and we took it. It's going to be 104.5 FM.
104.5. Now, back in 2000, when you put in your initial application, it was like an application window for Illinois.
Right.
The Socialist Forum was not the only group to submit an application.
That's correct. There were three other local I guess you'd call them progressive groups of various types, and a church group that originally applied, a couple church groups that originally applied here in Champaign. One of the church groups followed up when the window reopened, and Socialist Forum was the only one of the progressive groups that followed up and refiled the application. I think some people just got tired of waiting.
Mm-hmm.
But we followed up, and it's came through for us.
And as far as we know, the Socialist Forum license is the only one to be granted. Thus far in Champaign-Urbana.
There's one for something called the Champaign Chinese Ministry Association.
Oh, and have they received a permit?
Yes. Now, I don't know that they've received the permit, but they're basically in the same place that we are. They should. Their license application looks good, and they will probably get one here in the near future.
But they're for a different frequency.
Yeah, it'll be a different frequency.
Okay, and so maybe you can tell us a little bit more then about the Socialist Forum, because this is probably a group that a lot of people have never heard about and probably really never expected would get a radio license.
Well, Socialist Forum's a group that's been around now for more than a decade. It started a number of progressives here in the community started supporting the strike action that was going on down in Decatur in the early 90s when Decatur was declared a war zone for the attacks by corporations on workers and their rights to organize. It's done a lot of work with the local labor community. We've also done some other work. Living Wage is one example of some of the work that we've done. It's now in effect in four different governments here locally. We've done a number of other projects along those lines. But basically, we're a non-sectarian democratic socialist with a small d and a small s group. We are pretty informal, but we also are activists that had a long experience with the media in this town. And I can't say that WEF's been unfriendly to us, but folks like the News Gazette, a local radio other than WEF, have been, basically, they don't like to hear the S word in public associated with their media. I could tell you stories of things being rejected by the News Gazette. Occasionally, they'll print something from an alternative perspective than the usual right-wing perspective that they put out there. But that was one of the reasons why we decided to apply for a license. We feel that progressives really need their own media, although we also feel that we're going to keep working on trying to get our message out in regular media when we get an opportunity.
And when you say non-sectarian and little d and little s, you mean that you have no particular party affiliation, right?
Right, right. We also don't get directly involved in electoral politics, although we all have very strong feelings about different candidates. So, we get together and we like to talk about and advance ideas that in many countries are considered middle of the road. In this country, it's considered way out on the left. But we think that society should work for people.
So after about 3 years, then, does the fact that the license was accepted, the license application was accepted, and the construction permit, does that come as kind of a surprise?
Well, let's put it this way. It's going to be a big project, but I think this community can stand another 168 hours a week of opportunities for community members to get on the radio. This isn't going to be Socialist Forum's party line station. A lot of us are very much involved with the Independent Media Center. And in fact, the local IMC was just barely getting talked about when we filed this. And one of the reasons why it didn't file for a radio license at that time was the fact that it hadn't really been around, wasn't really established yet. But from the very beginning of the IMC, the thought was whoever came out with a license from this whole process, whichever group, was going to work closely with the IMC. And we're still, you know, got to settle the details, but I think it can be basically said that the IMC will be our partner in operating this station.
Now, one of the things which the FCC, I think, took into account in evaluating an applicant's eligibility was really how long the organization had been around,
right,
wasn't it? So that,
right,
that did, in many ways, work in the favor of the Socialist Forum.
Yeah, you got an extra point on your application for being able to prove that you're presence in the community for at least 2 years. As it turns out, the IMC probably could have applied at that time if it had been in existence and, you know, really wasn't formed right at the time the original window was opened.
Right, it was September 2000 before it came together.
Yeah. But I think it's one of those things where the FCC wants... A long time, it seemed like they just wanted to give lip service to local, you know, input. And a lot of their policies still do nothing but grind local communities under their heel. But there's a few things like low-power FM that are coming along that look a little bit more positive.
And when the kind of station we're looking at, I mean, it's truly low-power. It's 100 watts. So
right,
you cover basically the Twin Cities pretty well.
The FCC on its website says its typical broadcast radius is about 3.5 miles. In other words, it's a circle with a diameter of 7 miles from the actual transmitter location. We will probably be locating somewhere in downtown Urbana. There's, of course, a lot of things in the mix right now about where exactly that will be. Certainly, the IMC is looking for a new home right now, and our idea is that hopefully the IMC will be in its new home, and wherever that will also be the studio and transmitter locations, of course, pending a lot of work on everybody's part.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more then about what the station will be. So you've mentioned the Independent Media Center being a partner in the station.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know a lot of this is up in the air, but what kind of partnership do you imagine?
Well, basically, I think the Independent Media Center has worked really well about just being a resource for the community. And I think, certainly when you're talking about radio time, it's a little bit more limited than the internet, but, you know, you still got 8 hours a week to fill up, theoretically. We've got to be on the air at least 8 hours a day with local programming. There's also, of course, a great deal of great public affairs broadcasting out there that doesn't get on the air just due to limitations in people's broadcast schedules. But we certainly want and hope that people will get involved. The IMC already does a radio news show here on Mondays on WEFT. I think there's going to continue to be a lot of work between Independent Media Center and WEFT and basically the new station. We're going to be partners, I think, in working together to build a media that reflects the community a little bit better than the corporate media does.
So you think that the station itself, the studios and transmitter, will be probably located at the IMC wherever it ends up being?
Yeah. Yeah, more the studio definitely will be. The transmitter, I think, is more an issue of zoning and stuff like that for a tower. Obviously, when you're talking about low-power FM, you really can't put a tower out in the sticks because of zoning. And I haven't sat down with the city of Urbana on that, but I think that something can be worked out. I mean, we'll have to work out something, obviously.
So. And with such a short sort of broadcast radius, you really don't want to be too far out of town.
Right, right. It's obvious you can't put a low-power FM radio station out in a cornfield somewhere and expect it to serve Urbana. And quite frankly, I think the city, it's in their interest to have a radio station in Urbana. The corporate empires have basically kind of all picked up. I think there's a couple that are still technically licensed for Urbana, but they don't reflect anything really in Urbana.
Oh, and pretty much, I don't think there are any actual studios left in Urbana.
No, no.
Aside from WILLL.
Exactly, exactly.
Everyone else, the last cluster to be in there was AAA, which used to be up on Broadway Avenue.
Right.
Outside downtown, they've moved out to West Champaign somewhere now.
So
there will be an actual studio situation.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Do you suspect then that in many ways the new station will look a lot like WEFT?
I think that's actually probably a good way to put it. One of the reasons why we thought that this town could use another community station is because WEFT has done a great job, but it's in constant demand. I know I've talked to a few people over the years that have criticized WEFT for its programming, saying there should be more public affairs or whatever, but quite frankly, you know, there's only 168 hours in a week, and you've got to serve a lot of different constituencies to finance a station like WEFT. I mean, it takes money. You guys got a big transmitter. I know I helped take it off the truck years ago. Thankfully, I didn't drop it. But, you know, it takes money. Now, I think low-power FM, it's going to take a lot less money. You're not – once we get initially on the air, the operating expenses for a station like this are much less than WEFT. So I think the financially, it won't be something to compete with WEFT financially. And I think it's one of the things where we will – serve as an alternative and maybe even a training ground. I mean, obviously, if people, you know, hear that, you know, their air shifters are interested in getting on the air a couple more hours a week, I'm sure we're open to that. I know I've had some informal discussions with Mick Wolf about this because the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, in contrast to the NAB and NPR, have been very supportive of the low-power FM. We'll be joining the NFCB because they've got a great rate for low-power FMs, if nothing else. But, you know, they're the folks that can kind of run interference, give you advice and things like that. So it's going to be good to be, working with folks that want to help us out. I mean, I can imagine some things like air shifter training and stuff like that, where WEF can certainly give us some good advice and help and things like that. But we've got to work all that out. It's all just been real informal discussions up to this point.
Right. So you think this will be a true community radio station?
Yes. Yes.
And not definitely necessarily more like a college station or a university kind of NPR outlet?
Yeah. I think you're going to see a wide variety of programming, definitely. And it's not going to be all public affairs. I mean, obviously, you know, this is a town that really likes its music. I'm sure there's going to be room for music on this station. There's going to be room for spoken word. There's going to be room for all the different communities in this town that have been served by WEFT, but could use a little bit more elbow room to sit down there. And I think it's going to be a real positive for both WEFT and the community to have this sort of a sister station, although there's no, you know, a formal association that we can have. But, I mean, it's just a fact of life that people, you know, are willing to help you out.
And that's part of the low-power FM rules, isn't it?
That's
there
right.
They have to be formally separate.
Right, right. For instance, somebody who was doing an air shift here, for instance, might make a tape of their show and bring it over, but it's not going to be anything that we have an agreement to rebroadcast WEFT shows.
And there has to be a real, like, for example, someone on the board of directors at WEFT can't also be sort of on the management role at the station.
There's a number of things to keep everything separate. Another thing is that if somebody did do that, then that wouldn't count towards our 8 hours of locally produced programming. It's got
to
be within our studios.
At the station.
Right, right.
Okay.
But it could fit in the rest of the day. We've got to be on the air at least 12 hours a day, and 8 hours of that has to be locally produced.
And there's another 16 past it.
That's right. That's right.
And so you brought the funding issue. And, mm-hmm. and I know that historically, back in the 1970s, when the FCC decided to kill low-power broadcasting, which existed from the 1940s all the way through to 1978, one of the biggest motivations for doing it, and it was brought on by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, most significantly in NPR, was worry that the low-power stations were, one, taking away spectrum space from larger so-called full-service broadcasters, but also diluting the funding base for NPR stations and our public radio stations. What do you think things have changed?
Well, it's like I said earlier, once we get on the air, our requirements for funding are going to be relatively limited. You know, the power that this thing takes be like your average or even less than your average household power bill. There'll be, I think it's about $600 a year for a license to broadcast music. NFCB memberships, $150 a year. Then you have possibly some other programming fees and, you know, equipment repair and things like that. But you're talking, you know, several hundred dollars a month maximum actually to keep the station running.
Okay.
There's an initial investment, of course, and it's going to be somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 to actually get the equipment to put the station up. And that's really the biggest chunk of change that's involved in this whole thing.
So what you're saying basically is maybe for the equivalent of WEF's annual budget, we'll put the station on the air and keep it on the air for as long as 5 years.
Basically, yeah. You know, it's one of those things. We're going to have a much more limited broadcast area. I mean, WEF has, you know, great equipment. They've got a great signal. I know I can hear it in Decatur even, you know, at times. And, you know, it covers a great deal of, you know, area. Obviously, we're going to be a lot smaller area. Of course, there's things like the internet and stuff now. You know, I don't know whether we'll get into that or not. That costs money. I know Wes had some experience with that. But, you know, there's a lot of possibilities in terms of what we can do to reach the community. And we'll certainly be serving all of Urbana and most of Champaign, and quite likely, given the flat terrain around here, maybe even in surrounding communities.
Right,
if you have the antenna pointed just the right way, you might be able to get it.
Mm-hmm. So where's the planning going from here? Because now, I mean, you've received the construction permit, but
right,
that's just, it's a piece of paper at this moment.
Right. Well, this fall, we knew we were probably going to get the construction permit pretty soon. So we've started making some grant applications. Some of the grant writers at IMC have been looking for things. So you never can tell if that's going to come through. Obviously, we need to get, you know, start fundraising here in the near future to build the station. We also need to come to a formal agreement between Socialist Forum and IMC. We've got basically the idea right now is to have a board composed jointly of members from both organizations to operate the station. SF has to remain the licensee. That's the way the rules are written and stuff, but we can certainly operate it with other people. And that's all going to be coming up. I'm going to be presenting a proposal here in the near future to both Socialist Forum and the IMC. We'll hash it out in terms of, you know, what's going to work for everybody. If people are interested in, you know, getting involved, certainly there's opportunities to do so at this point. I've had several people already come up and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in helping out. The IMC, our next steering group meeting there is next Thursday, January 8th, and that's at 8 p.m., I believe. It's either 7 or 8 p.m. Somebody will be there at 8 anyway, because meetings always run at least an hour, pretty much. So if you're interested, check in at the IMC. Socialist Forum meets the third Saturday of the month, which this month will be January 17th from 3 to 5 again. Once again, at the IMC itself at 218 West Main in downtown Urbana. Or people, if they want to, they can email me. And that's Rebel Mike, REBELMIKE, at earthlink.net.
And all these meetings are open to the public.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Anyone can come in and participate.
Yeah.
And that's when you'll start hashing out some of the details for how the station
right.
is going to be put together and run.
I imagine we'll also probably in the near future schedule a regular meeting time, because this is going to be a project that's kind of separate. Now, the IMC has a radio group that meets, and that is mainly focused here on the News Hour program that they have on Mondays. And I imagine they'll probably want to keep focused on that, but I'm going to sit down and try to talk to him, talk to them this week coming up about that and find out what's going on. Because obviously, at some point, the radio committee at the IMC will probably merge into something to do with the radio station, but both those things for the time being will probably remain separate, I imagine.
Okay, great. And people, of course, can, as things develop, they will be posted to the IMC website.
That's right. We'll be keeping the community up to date on how to get involved, when meetings happen, how they can contribute, all those good things.
And that's www.ucimc.org. And of course,
right.
whatever I know, I'll relay here on Media Geek.
Okay.
Well, Mike, thanks. This is great news to
okay.
hear that Champaign-Urbana, you know, which for the longest time was the only city in Illinois with a community radio station, will become now the only city with two community radio stations.
That's right. We're definitely at the cutting edge of alternative media.
Definitely so. Well, thanks again. And Drew, thanks for sitting in. I know you could barely get a word in edgewise with me here.
All my questions were answered.
All your questions were answered. Okay. Next time, just, Mr. Cotta. And I'll call on you like Horseshack. Well, that brings to a close of this edition of Media Geek. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be in next week with more talk, and I think maybe next week we'll be talking about college radio.
Yeah, I think we will. We'll be hearing from David Pecoraro, otherwise known as Rotten Milk, from WZRD, and probably from Bill Saylor.
Only he doesn't know it yet.
Only he doesn't know it yet. So,
so if he's listening, he's saying, oh, I'm going to be a media geek. So with luck, he'll be on as well, and we'll look into this other form of often forgotten alternative radio that certainly enriches many a dialogue. Of course, we'll have more news of our media environment. And, of course, you can check out the Media Geek website at www.mediageek.org. If you have any comments about the program, send them on to me, Paul, at mediageek.org.